Welcome to the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And hi, we're on Facebook Live. I think this is only the second or third time we've ever even done anything. I think we did it at Comicpalooza one year. We did a little bit of Facebook Live.
Yeah, Comicpalooza.
We did like a portion of an episode one time.
You know, with Rob, I think.
Or something. I don't remember. Well, Rob recorded the whole thing. That was different, though. We didn't actually Facebook Live
it. That's right. He did a little tiny bit of
We figured, you know, man, everyone's stuck at home unless they're essential businesses. Like, we're still working.
Yeah.
And so we were like, let's do something different tonight and bring some entertainment to the people here in Houston and maybe around the world.
That's right.
Probably no one around the world. It's too late at night. They're all either waking up or sleeping. But, you know, we figured, hey, let's entertain people, and they can see our ugly mugs and see how the Rebel Radio Podcast kind of operates.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
You know, and thank you guys for logging in and listening.
Yeah,
for watching, in that case, on Facebook Live. And so how's it going?
It's been good. Like you said, you know, we're still operating, for the most part, business as usual. But, you know, with the situation that is at hand.
This really fucked shit up.
Yeah.
You know, they announced this week Comicpalooza is canceled for this year.
Yes.
And, you know, it was a big deal for us, man. We go through it every year. We do a live show.
That's our hangout. A lot of people hang out. Yeah.
It's our hangout. We get to see our old friends. We get to buy some cool shit, go see some cool panels. And it's all gone because this fucking COVID-19 is just really screwing things up this year. And so disappointed, to say the least. But safety first and people's lives and health is more important than a comic convention when it comes down to it.
I'd have to agree with that. You know, I was pretty disappointed myself because around this time, this is whenever they finalize announcing the big names.
Right.
They were getting down to it. Usually we figure out who we're going to split a photo op together, or at least talk about it.
We've
done it once, but
nobody really clicked for
us. Yeah. I think we had Queen of Dragons notable, but I don't think we wanted to chip in like $100
too
each.
Much money.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and we always get our photos with Ming, so that's a given, but nobody else really.
Yeah. So it just is disappointing, you know. San Diego Comic-Con is already talking.
Craig's watching. So hello, Craig.
San Diego Comic-Con is already talking about how they may have to make a decision soon. And this thing has just really messed things up for a lot of people. A lot of people's plans. A lot of people that were going to go to these cons and things like that. And it's disappointing, to say the least. But safety first. And hopefully we get further into the summer, this thing starts ending some or calming down. But then part of me thinks we're in this for the long haul, you know?
Yeah, it is Texas, and it does get kind of hot, and I thought I saw a report about over 80 degrees is kind of like the sweet spot where this stuff starts to get affected.
Yeah.
And it was 82 degrees yesterday, not today. It was kind of like mid-70s, but, you know, hopefully we have more of those, you know, 80 degrees plus, 90 degree weather.
Maybe starts leveling this thing
off. Yeah, for real.
And, but most important is, everybody, be safe out there. And, again, take care. That's kind of why we went live on Facebook tonight. We're like, hey, let's entertain some people and to the best of our ability with our ugly mugs and podcast for you and talk. Our kickoff for our theme month, the sequels that made us month, this is kind of our kickoff. Starting a little early, late March and going into April.
Yeah.
And basically covering some movies, sequels to movies, so movies that we've already covered previously. So we thought that would be kind of a cool idea for a theme month. And, but before we get into that, we always start the show with Download This, where we tell people what we've watched, streamed, and checked out this week, and watched a lot of stuff because we've had a lot of time. You know?
Yeah.
And, so what have you watched, man?
I have watched Zombieland Double Tap. It was like on sale as a rental for like 99 cents. Watched that. And yeah, it was okay. You know, I
wasn't a big fan of the first one enough to really watch the second one. You know,
the second one had like one of the funniest dad jokes I've ever heard, because my dad had told it to me once, and he's like, "I'm Blackfoot Indian." You know, because your feet are black whenever you run outside, because of the dirt. And then Woody Harrelson uses it's a dated you know dad joke, but Woody Harrelson says that in this film. And he's got the cool lever action, you know, Steve McQueen, Gunsmoke gun, And I just, you know, I kind of like anything with a Western flair. I kind of give it like an extra star of approval, just because it's got that flair to it.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and just it's watched that.
With swords in movies. Sometimes yeah. Like, okay, it's got a sword in
this
sword.
Movie's got swords. Okay, I'm gonna watch it. It might be horrible, but it's got swords. It's got
swords. Yeah.
And then we watched last night the movie. I fell asleep about 30 minutes in. We watched Hills Have Eyes remake, the 2005 remake with Wes Craven, and you've got Ted Levine, I think, is Buffalo Bill,
yeah, yeah.
Basically, and the science teacher that is in like some random films from the Spider-Man films, and then the girl from Hocus Pocus. Like, so, you know, you grow up watching this girl from Hocus Pocus. She's actually in an actual horror movie, not a campy kids spooky movie. And a decent remake, I guess.
Yeah.
Decent. Based on the Legend of Sonny Bean, of course, the cannibals in the Scots-Irish mountains that right. would steal from caravans, became an inbred infestation group of cannibals. As far as I know, you know, I'll let you do the other movie that we both watched together. I know you watched a cool film, but
yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, but for games, downloaded a couple games. I downloaded Resident Evil and Resident Evil 2, both remakes, because they were on sale, and I've been playing the game that gave me nightmares as a kid, and it still like keeps me on edge whenever I play it, because everything's dark. There's a lot of sounds. Zombies break through windows and.
Let's see.
Man, it's like it brings back memories, and Jackie thinks it's friggin' hilarious. She's like, "Oh my god, I should video record you right now. You're freaked out." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm freaked out." I was like, "You know what I saw as a kid? I saw a licker as a kid. It's basically a genetic zombie yeah. experience gone bad." Did you ever play Resident Evil?
Yeah.
Okay, you remember Resident Evil 2?
Yeah.
That was the coolest storyline. Rookie cop, first day on the job, zombies. Fuck this, I quit, you know. but it's I've been having fun playing it. I beat the first version of William Birkin, and I'm gonna progress through the game and see how I do.
Yeah.
As long as I have the time to do it now.
Yeah. Well, I took advantage. CBS, you know, a lot of people are offering service. CBS offered a free month right now of CBS All Access, so I signed up for it, and because I'm not a huge Trek fan, but I wanted to see Picard because it genuinely, the trailers and stuff interested me. And so I've been watching Star Trek Picard, and it's really good. It's not your typical Star Trek, which I think is why I like it more. It's there's cussing in it, which is weird to hear cussing in Star Trek. But it's a very much, it's not Starfleet driven. It's mm-hmm. it's more of a older, not broken down Picard, but weary of what his life has become with no ship to lead anymore. So he looks for a final adventure. Oh, shit, a cough, coronavirus, mm-hmm. no skin. And he takes on a new adventure, so to speak, to search for what he thinks could be Data's daughter. And it's really well written. It's a little slow in parts, but I don't mind the slowness of it because I think it's so well written. I've been watching it fast. I've already watched half of it.
Nice.
It's only 10 episodes, and I'm already 5 episodes through, so it must be holding my interest. It's kind of a direct sequel to Nemesis, Next Generation movie, and the Picard storylines that have to do with the Borg in the Next Generation,
mm-hmm.
then it is an overall sequel to the series. So it's kind of a continuation of the events of Nemesis and his run-ins with the Borg on the show whenever they took him over and things like that, and he became Locutus of Borg. So it's really good. I actually am very impressed with the Star Trek show. It's really well written, very well acted, and good stuff. And so if you go to CBS All Access right now, I think the code is GIFT. Type that in, you get a free month of CBS All Access, and you can watch that. And I was searching through it. There's not enough on that thing to make me keep it.
Yeah.
I might try to watch Picard and maybe blow through Discovery real fast and see if it's any good. But I there's not enough to make me pay $5.99 a month for it.
Yeah.
You know, right now.
But that's kind of like similar to what we did with YouTube Red.
Yeah.
Just got the free promo and then watched Cobra Kai Season 1, Cobra Kai Season 2, and then ducked out before the subscription started hitting us.
Yeah, but it's almost the only thing watching it though is like I kind of wish it was on like regular TV where more people could access it because yeah, streaming is easily accessed, but it's still not totally common. And, yeah. Paramount wants to revive Star Trek and have it do well. We'll put this really good show you have on regular TV where people can watch it. But unfortunately, it's behind a paywall. So, it's their choice. So, but I'm sure diehard Star Trek fans are watching it. But I think it's good enough that you would hope that the general audiences would be able to watch it, too, that don't want to pay for the show. But, oh, well, it's their choice. And then also, we both watched Onward, Of course, with all these movies leaving theaters, because all theaters have closed, they've gone to video on demand very early. Onward came out digitally released already, and a certain dumbass sitting to the right of me paid $20 to buy it, even though it's going to be on Disney Plus on April 3rd. Yes, I called you out on that.
Yeah.
So, and because I am friends with you and I have your Vudu account, I was able to watch Onward also. And I tell you what, Pixar, man, they continue to just do it, and they bring you a really good movie often. And man, that movie hits you in the feels, though. Pixar's good at that too. Whether it's Up or Toy Story or even Finding Dory, they're really good at pulling the heartstrings.
Yeah,
don't you agree?
I think they're really good at finding a common, emotional, drawstring to just yank on. Every film, it's they've done it with Andy, and letting go of your childhood, and they've done it with Feelings, with Inside Out, so it's just a common theme that they do. Everything has feelings, right? It's just different things have feelings. Bugs have feelings. Feelings have feelings. Elves have feelings. But it's really cool, and I found myself laughing. And being emotionally tied to it, because you kind of see this journey that the brothers go through, and Ian, it's kind of like a growing to be a man. And
yeah, it's extremely well written.
Yeah.
It's really well animated, which is come to expect it from Pixar. I thought one thing that stood out to me is the voice acting on it is really superb. Tom Holland and Chris Pratt are really good in the movie.
Very good.
Which I thought they sold you these animated characters, which is something that an anime movie should do, and Toy Story does a good job of it. And,
yes.
And sometimes, Disney does a good job of that overall, but sometimes you notice it more in other movies. And that's how I felt in Onward. I'm like, they really sold these characters, like you believe these brothers are in this fancy world, like you went on this journey with them,
Yeah, yeah, you were definitely along for the ride. There's a lot of fear that Ian goes through and anxiety that I think you can relate to,
yeah.
Especially if you're an introvert, Ian's the introvert, and his older brother is the extrovert.
Yeah.
Is very out there, very,
And it was very emotional. It was emotional and hard for me to watch because having lost my father.
Yeah.
And the whole story of these ideas, getting to spend one more day with their dad, it was really hard. It was hard for me to watch, honestly. And I might be a grown man, but I was tearing up some. I was like, yeah, this is a pretty emotional movie.
Yeah.
And
I didn't think about it whenever because you're like, you didn't warn me about this.
Yeah,
man.
I told you.
And like, I was like, oh, crap, man. I was like, this is like Big Fish level for you, kind of.
Pretty hard to watch
at times.
But that's the power of Pixar and Disney and what they do with animation is they bring these characters to life in a way that no one else does, and they make you draw them.
Oh, Long joined.
So, hi, Long. Hi, everybody. Yep, we're on Facebook Live. I don't like looking at the camera.
Yeah, what's up, Long?
Onward is really good, man. It's worth watching. But don't spend $20 on it. Wait till it goes to Disney Plus on April 3rd, Matt.
Or, get like, three people to like...
Or have friends that are dumb and they buy it early and I just log in a Vudu account. I'm like, well, I'm going to watch the motherfucker since he bought it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a doggy on that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if it was coming to Disney Plus like 3 months from now, sure. But a week, man. A week.
I can't wait for
you
nothing.
You could have waited a week.
I know you can't. Yeah, man.
But, oh, well. And, what else did I watch? I guess that's all. I've really just been watching Picard. It feels like I watched a lot being off work. Well, not off work because we're still working, but being home in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess really just watched a lot of Picard this week. And I haven't played a lot of games, a bit. I go through waves of video games, though, where I'll play them a whole lot. Then I'll kind of take breaks from them. I feel like I'm in that break mode right now. I'm just watching a lot of movies and TV shows and things,
And getting caught up.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I'm just trying to think if I watched something else. My brain was trying to work there for a minute.
Slowing down.
Stop doing that. It is 10 o'clock at night. My brain doesn't work that good. So, so let's get in today's featured film then. The sequels that made us month. We rebooted the show with episode 81. That's when we started covering movies. So we were like, let's do sequels to movies we've already covered. And episode 81, we did Batman 1989, of course, with Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton. So what better way to start out the sequels that made us month with Batman Returns? The 1992 sequel.
Yes.
Directed by Tim Burton. And I wouldn't even call this a sequel. It's very much a standalone film. Other than Batman exists and the world looks the same, it has nothing to do with Batman 1. And that always bothered me even as a I wasn't a kid. I was in high school when this came out. And I'm like, where is Batman returning from? That's my biggest problem. But you want to summarize the film?
Yeah. So basically, it opens up with a very Tim Burton setting. It zooms through the landscape. And, you get the origin story of Penguin, Oswald Cobblepot. And you see his hard childhood, zooms forward into today, where you have Maxwell, forget his last name, but basically Walken's character, and he is looking to sign a big power plant deal with Wayne Industry and make this new power plant, which actually sucks power from the city instead of making power. I don't know how that works, but Oswald Cobblepot comes back up and decides he's going to kill Max's son in the middle of this big business ceremony, and he basically blackmails him. He gets help to become mayor from Walken's character. And then you also have, there's a lot of key pieces in here. That's the thing about this movie, a lot of pillars. So you've got Walken, you've got Penguin, you've got Batman, you've got Catwoman. And Catwoman probably has the most solid origin story as far as like origin stories that are being told.
Cats eat her fingers and stuff.
Yeah, she's revived by alley cats. And she comes home, starts scratching stuff up, starts sewing stuff into this latex cat suit, which looks cool. I think it's the coolest looking cat.
So basically, Catwoman. Her and Penguin team up together to try to take out Batman.
Yeah.
But then Catwoman has other motives. She wants to take out Shrek because he was mean to her, basically, and pushed her out the window.
Yeah. Tried to kill her.
And then Batman is just sort of in the middle of all this.
Yeah,
Did you notice that? Were you watching it? Like, Batman's just... There's no plot for Batman in this. He's just sort of there to stop...
Really not until they try and frame him for the murder of this...
Which is really late in the film.
For Miss Christmas or whatever.
Yeah.
Miss Gotham. And then it's got a very anticlimactic third act. The battle just isn't... At the end, just isn't what you want it to be. There's some bad lines, some campiness. So it's a very mixed bag. You've got this dark setting and this movie that's supposed to be very dark. Looks great. I think it looks great. But they pass it off as this film that's supposed to be very moody, very dreary. But then it's got these campy moments, like with the car, and then just with the liners.
He tells Catwoman to eat floor at one point.
Yeah, I'm like, eat what? Floor.
So, man, I saw this in theaters back when I was in high school. I was super excited for it because, you know, it was a sequel to 89 Batman. And I remember coming out of theaters thinking, like, okay, that was all right, but it wasn't as good as 89 Batman. And, you know, rewatching this now, I feel like maybe everyone's hearts weren't in it. You know, none of them had contracts for sequels. Michael Keaton, Tim Burton. Tim Burton only came back if he had complete control. And it's funny, the studio had a script already in place, but Tim Burton didn't really like any of it. Keaton wanted more money, you know, to come back.
$10 million.
Yeah. Danny DeVito was like the only one that was kind of on board for doing it. He was like, I'll do it, you know.
Yeah.
Only because his friend Jack Nicholson told him to do it because you're going to get paid big money. But I feel like Burton, and that's kind of what I felt like. DeVito's really good, and so is Michelle Pfeiffer.
All of them are good actors. But
Keaton's okay in this. Yeah. He's not as good as he is in 89 Batman, and like you said, it's just kind of a paycheck movie for him. It's like Hart didn't feel like he was in it. Tim Burton's direction is not as solid as it was in 89 Batman.
It's too much creativity that they gave him.
There's almost too much going on. It's really bizarre, like the Circle Gang? They just sort of show up at the beginning of the movie with no explanation for anything. But I guess they've been working for the Penguin all these years. And then I thought, one thing I never noticed was when the bat symbol goes off at the beginning of the movie and it symbols into his house, like, no one's driving by or visits Wayne Manor and doesn't ask him, hey, how come you have giant bat symbols on these lights?
Yeah, I know, right?
I guess he never has visitors. So the movie, you made a really good point. This movie's a real mixed bag of just all kinds of stuff. Some of it's really weird. Some of it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
The plot is all over the ridiculous. Place. It's all over the place.
It's like if you took away Christopher Walken's character and took just his intentions and you kind of put that onto the Penguin and then cut all the other crap in between, I think you have a good film, a good plot. The original
script, but before Tim Burton came on board, that was all Harvey Dent. He had the role of like this business guy that was, I'm sure it wasn't the same plot, and Billy Dee Williams was supposed to come back, and the Penguin was going to lead to the creation of Two-Face at the end of the movie, which would have led into the never-made Batman Triumphant, which was going to be the third Batman film that Burton was going to make. But when Burton came in, he rewrote it all. He created the Max Schreck character.
Okay.
And he just wanted Penguin and Catwoman. He didn't want a third villain in there. So he changed some of that. And, you know, I often wonder what that movie might have been with Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent.
You know? And we also had Marlon Wayans waiting in the wind to be Robin.
Yeah, that was a rumor at one point.
They held him for, I think it was like $100,000 to just hold him. And eventually they cut him because, man, look, there were too many chiefs in this film. So they cut him, and then you had Schumacher, go with Chris O'Donnell. Yeah.
But Batman Returns is interesting in that. Oh, another thing, one of Burton's stipulations was he didn't want to make a sequel. Neither did Keaton.
Yeah.
They wanted to be like sort of like James Bond, where it was just another Batman adventure. And in that sense, they did pull that off. The movie was highly successful, though. It made $47 million its opening weekend.
Yeah.
It went on to be a box office smash, but not smash enough to get Keaton and Burton to come back for part three, unfortunately.
Which is crazy because Keaton, I mean, early on, he sold his likeness to the toy companies. Yep. We got all kinds of Batman toys. I had a lot of them because there were so many. There was Deep Dive Batman. There was like yellow looking Batman. Flying Batman. There's a lot of Batman toys. And then, of course, the car. Mm-hmm. I think
still
one of
my favorite Batmobile.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Especially the security system whenever he just parks and then he hits the bloop, bloop alarm and all the metal armor comes around the whole vehicle. So a lot of cool moments. But ultimately, it's like, how do these guys get the blueprint to Batman's Batmobile? How does that happen?
There was no internet in 1992, well, at least easily accessible internet.
How does the Penguin see to drive in that car that he's driving? The duck? He drives a rubber duck-looking car.
And where does he get the duck?
Yeah, who made this? I mean, did he commission this duck to be made?
And then this giant sewer with like a stage in it in the middle in Gotham City?
Yeah.
Like, that was weird. It's like, okay, you just have these huge sewers in Gotham City?
And you have all the Penguins with the bombs strapped on them. And I remember the Penguin toys, the little Penguin toys you could get that shot rockets out of their backpack and stuff. Those are cool. But a lot of mixed up stuff in this film. It's not for lack of trying, as Jeremy Irons would say, not for lack of trying. But it's too much creative power.
There's some good stuff in this movie too. Yeah. Like Michelle Pfeiffer is genuinely very good in her role.
Oh, dude,
she's a little bit hammy, but a little bit serious too. She's enjoying the part, even though she hated the suit because they basically vacuum sealed her into it to the point where she would only be able to perform 6 to 10 minutes at a time because she got so hot she'd have to cool down, almost passed out. But she's really great in the role. She's sexy. She's also evil and vile and a villain too.
I like how the suit's just like stitched up.
Yeah.
And then I think the coolest look is whenever her hair is like falling out the back.
Yeah.
And she just looks completely mad.
Yeah. She's all like insanely fucked up.
Yeah.
Her origin's a little weird. It's like, okay, he throws her out the window for basically being too smart, which doesn't make sense because he could have covered that up. He's filthy rich. Why don't you just pay her off? I guess that's exactly. The 2000 things to do, you know, in this decade.
Yeah.
Instead of throwing her out the window. So she comes back to life by these cats eating her. So that's a little like really out there Tim Burton type stuff.
Yeah.
Because I don't ever remember reading a Batman comic ever where they eat her fingers and she comes back to life.
Yeah, that was weird.
And she's not really a cat burglar like the typical cat woman has always been portrayed.
No, she was like an anarchist, you know? She was putting all the the canisters in the microwave and making it blow up. And but she's got the coolest scene whenever she's just right there in between Penguin and Batman.
And she has the best one-liners, too.
Yes, she does. You
know, like when she tells police officers, that's Charles' problem, always, you know, mixing your pistols up with your privates. I mean, she delivers them well, you know. So she gets some of the best lines. She gets some really good lines with Batman.
Yeah.
Of course, everybody talks about the famous Batman kissing, licking scene.
Yes.
You know, which this movie came known for.
It's probably how they got Keaton to stay on. Right. Like, okay, look, we're going to have Michelle Pfeiffer lick you in the face. Okay, right. Okay,
I'll stay. When she's writhing around in the bed, I mean, it's like, it's pretty hot.
Was very much in the prime of her career.
Oh, for sure.
The lines, though, I think one of my favorite ones is, you know, I was trying to help her. Every girl you try to help winds up dead.
Yeah.
And it's just like, just these lines for days.
And she legitimately enjoyed the role for the most part. She said before, if Burton had done part three, she would have came back. But once Burton and Keaton were out, she had no interest in coming back for Schumacher. And I think there were rumors at one time, if I remember right, that Schumacher wanted Catwoman back for Batman Forever, but Michelle Pfeiffer had no interest at that point. But she's good in the role. And both villains are. And these, you know, the 90s Batman films became known for that. They became known as, like, the villain Batman movies.
Yeah.
And Batman was just a background character. And Danny DeVito's really good in this, too. He's disgustingly gross.
Oh, dude.
So gross, in fact. Yeah, it's so gross, in fact, that he scared some people on set, including, you know, maybe children that are around. They think the monkey, whenever he delivers the letter, they couldn't get the monkey to do it because they think the monkey was afraid of Danny DeVito. Kenner, with the action figures, had to ask for the figures to be repainted and redone. In fact, they ended up using the mold from the Superpowers Penguin figure and just painting it in the colors from the movie because the original mold of the figure was too gross to sell to kids at that time. So, you know, there's some interesting things like that. And even I'm rewatching this week, I'm like, Penguin is really nasty.
He is. The suit that he's in? Yeah, he's
wearing around like a underwear type suit that's all wet and disgusting, like someone that's, you know, peed themselves a lot in.
He looks like a bag of potatoes.
Yes.
Really.
And
looks like a bag of potatoes.
But that being said, Danny DeVito owns the part.
He does.
He's really good. He's creepy. He's scary. You buy into him that he's a madman, and his plot's ridiculous. It makes no sense why he would go along with a Shrek and want to be mayor and all that. He just kind of does it for whatever reason.
He made me believe that he would bite somebody's nose off in real life.
That scene makes me laugh every time, though. He's like, well, at least my nose isn't gushing blood. He bites the guy. I'm like, wow, that's fucked up, but it's funny. Yeah. You know? And so DeVito is really great. And then Keaton, man. Keaton, as much as he has nothing to do in this movie for the first hour and 15 minutes, he's still really good in the movie.
Absolutely. You know,
Keaton has always been that way. He's always been a character actor that takes his part and he does the best he can with it. I don't even know if I call him a character actor anymore now that he's been in some Oscar-nominated films. But back in the 90s, he was still kind of that character actor. I mean, Batman was the biggest thing he had done at that point.
Yeah.
And I actually rewatch. That's one thing I do like watching Batman Returns. I think Batman Returns does sell me on him more as Bruce Wayne than 89 Batman did. Like, 89 Batman, it's like, okay, anybody can be in the suit, but I never bought Keaton as, like, a dashing, you know, bachelor Bruce Wayne. But in this, I don't know, I buy him a little more than this as Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense, but, you know.
That makes sense. I guess with the romance scenes Yeah, I could see him more as a Bruce Wayne character in this one.
But Batman Returns also reaffirms how much I do like Keaton as Batman in general. And I would have always liked to have seen one more. And then even watching, there's all the internet fanboys would love to have a Batman Beyond movie where he comes back as Bruce Wayne. And I'd be all for that. I think that'd be cool as shit.
And then Tom Holland as Terry.
We can't put Tom Holland in everything.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, he's already like Spider-Man and Uncharted. I guess he's still doing the Uncharted movie.
Yeah.
But
somebody.
But yeah, but it does make me want to see that. But Batman Returns is just, you know, just an interesting, weird, not terrible, but not great Batman film. It's kind of,
yeah.
But it's more than middle of the road. I think the set designs and the acting and overall save it from being more of a middle of the road, but more of like a, so you rank it out 10. It's not quite a 5. I'd give it a little hard. 6.5, 7 out of 10.
Yeah, for the character development, definitely does save it. I mean, every character has their own plight, and that's what Burton does probably the best. In every one of his movies, he shows you these personal issues that his characters are going through.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, Jack Skellington, who is on the underneath, he's actually tired of Halloween. You've got Oswald Cobblepot, who just had a really jacked up upbringing, and you know that is what causes his issues. Selena Kyle, obviously how she was treated and her own struggles, and then you know of course Bruce Wayne has you know mommy daddy issues.
Right.
So you know that's definitely a win. That was a plus. So. Bad plot, good acting.
Pee Wee Herman is in this movie at the beginning.
Did I miss that?
Yes, he's at the beginning of the movie. He plays Oswald Cobblepot's father.
That's right.
Yes, and it's so weird. Like, you know, and I remember when this came out, I think it was, I could be wrong on this, but I think it was shortly after he got in trouble. And
okay.
So, you know, and he appeared in this film. It's like, okay, that's kind of so, weird.
I wonder,
him in this,
he should have, like, thrown him off the bridge and said,
Well, you know, Paul Rubens did quite a bit of serious roles back in the 80s and 90s, and people don't remember him for that, though. They always remember him as Pee Wee Herman. But, yeah, so he's in this. Christopher Walken was not Burton's first choice because he said, not because he didn't think he could act, that Burton was legitimately scared of Christopher Walken. And then when he met him, he realized, oh, okay, he's actually a nice guy.
That's cool.
And, but, oh, man. You know, this is a movie that, like, I don't like the title, as I said earlier. Like, why is it called Batman Returns? Where's he returning from? But I don't hate this movie. It's, if I was ranking the Batman films, it's probably...
Three?
No, no.
Well, of
pre, all the Batman films.
Pre-Nolan.
Yeah, probably well, yeah, because all three Nolan films are better than this, I think.
Yeah, you know, I think so.
I would think that this would be probably... I don't know if I'd put it fifth, because I'd have to put Mask of the Phantasm even above this.
Oh, you're going anime.
Oh, yeah, you got to go all Batman films that release theatrically, you know.
Is Batman Returns better, Batman Forever better than this?
No, no.
No?
No, Batman Forever has great ideas and great moments, but just Tommy Lee Jones is so terribly,
he's too over the
terribly
top.
Cheesy in it that it...
Yeah.
Jim Carrey doesn't ruin that movie for me. It's Tommy Lee Jones. I just, he's too much in the movie.
I think he was trying to match Jim Carrey's energy or
yes,
something.
I think so too.
If you watch that movie, it's like, and I'm going to do my best Tommy Lee, Jim Carrey.
And it has a weird plot too, like the stealing people's mind
brains,
when they're watching TV.
Yes.
It's bizarre. It was almost like the 90s after, you know, the 89 Batman with Jack Nicholson, that's a classic. You know, that's really good.
Yeah.
Then after that, it's almost like, well, how weird can we make these? Can we make them campier and weirder than the 1966 Adam West shows or something? You know, I don't know what they were thinking with these those films. Because then Batman and Robin gets just as bizarre, and it's a terrible film. Where Arnold's trying
except
to
freeze for Arnold.
His city. And
Arnold's the best part of
that
film.
I'm not even sure what Poison Ivan's even doing in that movie. So
yeah,
the Batman movies just went from 89 Batman to Batman Returns, which is, like we said, good but not great. And then they just, but weird. And then they just got weirder as they went along with
yeah.
Schumacher.
The one-liner dad jokes that Arnold tells are pretty funny. What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age.
That movie is awful.
Allow me to break the ice.
That would be a that would be a Patreon film, not a reference.
That would be it. That would be a good
so
Patreon
bad.
Film.
But
we got Kiss from a Rose from Batman Forever, and Nicole Kidman. That was pretty cool. I'd still rather have the Keaton Pfeiffer, you know, love duo than
yeah.
the Batnipple and Kidman duo.
Oh yeah, I'd take this. I'd take Batman Returns or Batman Forever any day. But the only thing I like about Batman Forever, to be honest, is I thought the Robin costume was kind of cool.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
Cool costumes.
And that is one thing that Batman Forever gave us was a live action Robin that we still haven't gotten. And I think I may have said this on the show before. Or maybe just talking pre-show that the problem with Robin is, like, I think directors are afraid to do him live action because the general public views Robin as Burt Ward or Chris O'Donnell. They don't know the Robin that's in the comics as Tim Drake or currently Damian Wayne.
Jason
or,
Todd.
Well, I wouldn't even say Jason Todd. I'm talking the cool Robins.
Oh,
Tim Drake
okay.
or Damian Wayne or even the Robins we got in the... Batman the Animated Series with Dick Grayson. You know, the public doesn't know those Robins. And I think it's going to take one director out there to finally make a Batman film be brave and bring in Robin and make Robin a badass. And when they do that and we get a live-action badass Robin, then it could change public perception of what Robin is. You know, because most people outside of geek culture just, again, view Robin as Burt Ward or Chris O'Donnell's cheesy Robin from the 90s. They don't
know
that Robin can be a badass sidekick. And that's true, you know, because Dick Grayson's a great character, and so is Tim Drake and Damian Wayne, Yeah, it is
Damian. Yeah, Damian Wayne.
I did say it right.
Yeah.
And but now leave Jason Todd out. He was pussified Robin. That's why he got killed by the Joker. Yeah. But too bad, so sad for him.
Too bad, yeah. So sad.
But overall, Batman Returns, I'd give it probably a B.
B, you know? B minus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a terrible film. It's just a weird sequel. It felt like Warner Brothers wanted a sequel badly because Batman made a lot of money. And that's interesting, too. It's 89, almost 4 years in between movies for
yeah.
this. Yeah. It was a long time for sequels, even back then. And I think that was part of Keaton and Burton not really wanting to do it, but they came together and they did it. And it's funny, I mentioned that he didn't like Christopher Walken, but he must have liked him enough to cast him in Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
He ended up working with him again. And but, you know, I often wonder, though, watching this movie, what we would have gotten if Burton had come back for Batman Triumphant. You know, a third Batman film. Burton has mentioned in the past that he was interested in bringing Billy Dee Williams back as Harvey Dent, maybe do Two-Face in his version, but the world will never know. What's interesting is Christopher Walken, I didn't realize this until I was researching this movie, that Walken was cast in the Superman Lives movie that did not get made.
Really?
He was going to play Brainiac.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, that was interesting.
That would have been interesting. Burton
had cast him in that, too.
Cage, Walken.
Yeah. I still wanted to see that movie.
Yeah.
Even though it looked absolutely ridiculous, I think that's why I wanted to see Superman Lives. Because, like, how bizarre and fucked up would Burton have made a Superman movie?
Yeah, you took the Con Air hairstyle Nicolas Cage and then put him in this alien-looking suit.
Yeah, I mean, if you can make Batman Returns and be a weird, strange, Christmas-themed penguin Batman movie,
yeah.
And he would have been a really bizarre Superman movie. But the world will never know.
World will never know.
You know, yeah, maybe one day. No, not one day. There was ideas at one time. They did have ideas at one time. DC Comics actually went to... they were going to do a Batman 89 comic in continuity, where they were going to continue the stories after Batman Returns and make comics. And they were going to use some of Burton's notes and scripts and stuff to make comics.
That would have been cool.
But DC, the powers that be at DC, did not go for it. Some artists over at DC did submit that at one time, or pitched it, so to speak. And there was some concept art and stuff of what it would have looked like. I always thought that would have been a cool idea, you know, to continue the Keaton Batman world in the form of comics.
It definitely looked good. It looked the part.
Oh, yeah. Watching this on Blu-ray, because, you know, I got my new TV recently. Watching this in ultra high def and just off the Blu-ray, it looked really great. It didn't look like a 1992 film. I'm like, wow, this TV really makes this movie. And Warner Brothers does great work on their Blu-rays anyways.
Yeah.
They're one of the better companies when it comes to their Blu-ray quality. And the movie still looks really good even years later.
And it sounds good. Danny Elfman returned to score this film.
It took 50% of Warner Brothers' slots to build sets for this.
Oh, I didn't know that. Big, well, obviously big sets. He's driving through the streets. Mm-hmm. And then you had to build the big stage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
the Penguin stage. Yeah, then they would move sets around and kind of tear them down as they were going if they were done with them, so they could free up parts of the lot. So I didn't realize that. It's interesting, you watch this, you would think that it was filmed maybe on location at City or nothing, but 80% of this film was shot in sets on Warner Bros. Studio lot, so that's kind of cool.
Man.
Practical effects, you know, let's just...
A foregone approach.
Nowadays, I mean, Nolan did use a lot of practical effects in his films, but... A lot of that was filmed in Pittsburgh and Chicago, and then they did use CGI to make the cities look different with the helicopter shots, you know, and all the bridges and all that, you know. So they did do some things that were a little bit different.
Yeah.
So, but practical effects, I like them. So, but Batman Returns.
If you haven't seen it,
shame on you. You should have seen it.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, there's some younger people that maybe have not seen this.
Yeah, you know, the Gen Z types.
I don't know if he's on the Facebook Live, but I met a young person this week that hasn't seen The Thing.
Really?
Yeah, Adrian, I'm talking to you. And it's on Amazon Prime, Adrian, so you need to sit down and watch The Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's John Carpenter's classic. A movie we talked about doing that Halloween this year. It could very well be coming up for our Halloween month. So,
yeah.
Do your research, Adrian.
Yeah, Kurt, can't go wrong with a Kurt movie.
No, never. Never Kurt Russell, unless it's like maybe Overboard.
Oh, yeah, Overboard. Yeah. No,
or Captain Ron.
Captain Ron.
That movie's funny, though.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty campy.
But, yeah, so Batman Returns, man. It was our first movie we covered for the Sequels That Made Us month here on the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Yes.
So that's it for that feature film. Let's talk some news. There actually is some news this week. I think as much as the coronavirus has stopped the world for a lot of things, things are still having to go on. You know, studios are having to plan movies and things like that.
Yeah.
And so things are starting to move forward. And first thing is Ryan Reynolds is talking about doing a Dragon's Lair movie based on the old video game.
Okay.
And
doing it
for Netflix. And that's kind of cool. I just remember my biggest Dragon's Lair memory is that the game was really, really hard. You know, and I think there was an animated series too, wasn't there? Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And, but... You know,
that was NES, right? Dragon Slayer?
It might have been, yeah. It might have been.
What NES game wasn't hard?
And but I tell you what, though, that's the thing right now, man. 80s IPs are very popular. He-Man's coming back, of course, through Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
We have Transformers coming to Netflix probably next month, I'm assuming, since the trailer came out. She-Ra is on. Castlevania, there's an animated series. So why not a Dragon Slayer movie? You know, that's the thing right now. We got Thundercats 4 on the Cartoon Network.
Oh, yeah.
So everything old is new again. So there's got to be 80s IPs out there that have not been done yet, and this is one of them. So it could be interesting to see how that turns out. And let me see what else other news I've got here.
Rosario Dawson?
We talked about that last week.
That's right. We did talk about
that. She's going to be Ahsoka Tano. Marvel, even though Disney has shut down a lot of stuff, Marvel intends to go forward, if allowed, to start filming Doctor Strange 2 in June, so they can meet the release date for next year. Apparently, in that report, I guess Eternals had finished pretty much filming just about everything, because it comes out, it's supposed to be out in November, but of course we don't even have Black Widow yet.
Yeah.
And it got delayed, you know, we don't know when it's coming out.
Them and Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman got pushed back to August, so... wishful thinking, maybe, or maybe the theaters will be back open by then. How do you think people are going to react to that? Do you think people are going to flock to the theaters? Like, China's already talking about, like, opening their theaters with, like, big movies, like putting the Avengers and Avatar back in the theaters just to get people to come and do them, like, at discounted prices. There's been some talks about that here, too, about releasing some big films, like, in theaters and release them at discounted prices.
I hope they release Terminator 2 again.
And, well, I think it would probably be more recent hits, probably. Just to get people to return to theaters. Like, with all this going on, like, would you feel safe going to theaters, like, once they open back up?
Not right away.
No.
Maybe, like, give it another month, probably.
Yeah. Or maybe catch an early morning screening when it's not busy and bring sanitizing wipes with you and wipe it all down.
Yeah, bring one of those Russian Soviet gas masks.
And it's a shame because the theater experience is something I still enjoy, and I like seeing movies on the big screen. So I hope this doesn't ruin it, and I hope we can get back to normal when it comes to that as soon as we possibly can. Michael Biehn, man, one of my favorite actors, is going to be in The Mandalorian Season 2.
That's right. That was the Mandalorian update.
Yeah, that is cool. And Bill Burr is also going to return for Season 2. But I'm excited for Michael Biehn, and being that this guy was Hicks and Aliens and Johnny Rico and Tombstone, I really wanted to play like another bounty hunter. Is that okay to want that?
Yeah, but he's also going to die.
It's I know he's probably going to die, but I still. But if he plays a badass bounty hunter that competes with a Mandalorian or something, and he fucking dies like that, that'd be cool.
Yeah. You know?
Or maybe Baby Yoda can do the hand thing and like choke him or something.
Oh yeah.
You know, as long as he has a cool death, I'm okay with that. You know. And
Kenny Rogers.
Yeah, Kenny Rogers. Yeah, Kenny Rogers passed away this past week.
Early this week, yeah.
Yeah, not something that we normally would cover on the Rebel Radio podcast, but he's from Houston. We're in Houston. And so, for me, I'm a little bit older than you. For me, like, Kenny was, like, between Kenny and George Strait, those were, like, the guys that were country music growing up that my parents listened to. They'd spin their records. You know his songs, you know, and so he was kind of close to the heart being in Houston. And never a huge country music fan. I always lean more towards rock and roll. But I can respect country. And I certainly respect Kenny Rogers and what he brought to country music. And I always remember everyone thinks he did a lot of theatrical films. And no, he only did one. He did Six Pack, which is about the kids with the race cars and all that.
Yeah.
And he did a lot of TV movies. So people always mistake that he was an actor. And he was, but only one theatrical release. And people, you tell them that, they actually are surprised to hear that. Because they remember Kenny Rogers being in movies. And he was, but a lot of television movies. You know, he had the Gambler movies and a few other movies he did. And but just a soulful Southern country voice. A storyteller, singer.
Yeah.
One of the last of the great ones. And he will be missed. I'm not gonna lie, man. I jammed some Kenny Rogers. That
you told me
after I found it. Like, I put it on YouTube and I was watching some Kenny Rogers and listened to it. And I'm like, man, this guy had a voice, you know. And I will always remember. I bet my parents probably took me to the rodeo and probably saw him back in the 80s. I would imagine.
Wow.
At some point, I have to ask my mom, but I bet I probably saw Kenny Rogers in concert before I even knew what concerts were or remembered him, you know.
My first country concert was in 90. I think it was 94 or 93, and it was Billy Ray Cyrus at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. Yeah, he had come out with the Achy Breaky Heart that year, which we had to square dance to in elementary school at the time. my son got to square dance to Cotton Eye Joe, which is way cooler, you know, especially the remix version. That's pretty cool. But Billy Ray Cyrus for me. You win. You win the first rodeo concert thing.
And a bit of kind of big news that, you know, Diamond Distributors, which in some ways, this is a controversial topic if you're kind of following it. You know, Diamond Distributors is halting comic book deliveries right now, starting this week to comic book stores. First time that's ever happened in the industry because of the COVID-19 virus. And it's controversial because there's a lot of creators out there, especially independent creators, that feel that Marvel and DC have allowed this to happen, that they've allowed there to only be one major comic distributor. So it has independent artists scrambling to see if anyone else can distribute their comics, because some cities, comic book stores are still open. I know in Houston, a lot of the big Bedrock Comics and some of the other comic companies are still trying to get comics to their subscribers through, you know, mail or whatever.
Yeah.
So for them to not get their comics is affecting their business and affecting the fan base, because the mail's still running. UPS,
FedEx,
Amazon, yeah. Everyone's still delivering, because mail is one of those things that will never shut down unless it absolutely got terribly, terribly bad. So in questioning that, comic shops and fans are questioning, well, why are they shutting down when the mail's still running? And Diamond Comics, you know, has given the typical answer, saying, you know, hey, we're protecting our employees and things like that. So it's got both sides. I don't collect anymore, so it doesn't affect me that much, but I can see how it can affect the businesses. But I also see how Diamond Comics has to protect their employees and keep a lookout for them, because it's big business. But I also see the flip side, where creators are angry because they feel that DC and Marvel have allowed that over the years to only be one major comic distributor. But unfortunately, DC and Marvel have the big bucks to control that, you know, and they've allowed Diamond Comic Distributors to become the big bucks distributor of comics. So, and how do you fight that, you know?
It's weird that there's a monopoly on something, because you figure there'd be some kind of, I don't know, some kind of exclamation mark that pops up on that, you know, little detail, and, you know, maybe they mandate two distributors.
Right.
But that's pretty sad. I know we see local comic book artists at the at Comic Palooza every year, and hopefully they're able to find a solution to get their art out there and stay afloat.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Let's talk about that for a minute. I'm glad you brought that up. Comic Palooza is who, of course, we talked earlier in the show that they had to cancel this year, and they'll be back next year, May 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 2021. But they're going to be setting up a website, or part of the Compalooza website, to give a chance for merchandisers and merchants and artists to sell things through the Compalooza website that they might have been bringing through Compalooza. So I think that's a cool gesture that Compalooza is going to try to help those artists that were looking forward to that revenue that they would have gotten at a major convention like Compalooza.
Yeah, and they're allowing people to return the badges that they bought early.
Well, not only that, they're doing it's instant return.
Yeah.
Which is great, because Grotix is able to just instantly return everybody's money without them having to really do anything.
Yeah, so they're doing the right thing, and, you know, I'm glad that, you know, we're part of a company that, you know, is trying to do something. You know, I know the Houston Texans aren't our favorite football team right now. They donated $50,000 to the Houston Food Bank. I think J.J. Watt and his wife donated $350,000 to the Houston Food Bank. So it's cool seeing these, you know, Houston-based organizations doing their part.
Yeah.
Amidst of everything that's going on.
Yeah, and we hope in some small part we're doing our part to keep entertaining you with a podcast And I know I've listened to a few more podcasts the last couple of weeks. I always try to listen to some of our local friends' podcasts and the big ones I listen to. And because you find new ways to entertain yourself when you're at home a lot, you know, and you can watch a lot of movies and play games. But sometimes if I'm laying down to bed at night, I'll put a podcast on my phone and just listen to somebody, you know, when maybe it's Craig Price if he's still watching us live. He puts me, you know, I'm not saying you put me to sleep, Craig. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes just listen when you go to bed because it's comfortable to sit down and listen to a podcast.
Just want to hear the soothing words of Craig Price
talk. Hey, I love Matinee Heroes, man. Yeah. That's a good show. And so, you know, so we hope we're doing our part. That's why we went to Facebook Live tonight. We're hoping to entertain you a little bit on your Friday night since you can't go hang out at a bar or a theater or do anything else. You basically just sit at home and watch a movie and play with yourself and go to sleep or something. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. If that's your thing.
Yeah, if that's your thing.
If that kind of thing is your bag.
That's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, before we get out of here, let's preview next week's film because we're going to continue on with the sequels that made us month. And one of my favorite sci-fi series of all time. We did another movie we did early on when we rebooted the show. We did the original Planet of the Apes. So let's do the sequel to it. We're going to cover Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
A planet where apes evolved from men? There's got to be an answer.
Don't look for it, Taylor.
You may not like what you find.
Damn you all to hell!
The year, 3955. Charlton Heston as Taylor, a 20th century astronaut. Space wrecked in the incredible future. Linda Harrison as Nova, a savage beauty from the enslaved and voiceless human race.
They're marked for target practice.
James Franciscus as astronaut Brent on a reckless mission to rescue Taylor, trapped by the swaggering, brutal master race of apes who dominate the Earth. A planet shattered by the atomic war of a distant, forgotten past.
Where are you going?
Into the Forbidden Zone. Someone or something has outwitted the intelligence of the gorillas.
Invade! Invade!
Face the terrifying dangers of the Forbidden Zone with them. Engulfing you in the shattering experiences that await beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Well, there's an intelligence working in this place. They know we're here.
We are determined to know what the apes want. War or peace?
The super intelligent mutants. Are they human or something else? In their church, an unspeakable god.
A doomsday bomb.
Behind their faces, an unbearable secret.
We don't kill our enemies. We get our enemies to kill each other.
The irresistible war machine of the guerrilla army versus the devastating secret mind weapons of the subterranean mutants in civilization's final battle to answer the ultimate question. Can a planet long endure, half human and half ape? Is it the beginning or the end?
An interesting sequel where it's good, but it's, you could tell, like, back in the 60s, like, now, it's funny, you make a sequel now, right? They do Avengers, okay, and let's say it's $150 million.
Yeah.
Makes a fucking ton of money, right? So then, like, here's $200 million to go make Avengers 2. It was the opposite back then. So here's $15 million to make The Planet of the Apes, which is a really great-looking film.
Mm-hmm.
It was a success, but we're only going to give you $10 million to make Planet of the Apes 2.
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite back then. Then it was $8 million for 3, and if you watch all 5 of the original Planet of the Apes films, you can just tell it gets cheaper as they go along in the budget.
Is this the one where he's an orphan and he floats down the Nile and then he's discovered and he becomes a prince of Egypt?
No.
And then he's a slave and he gets like a staff and he's like, let my people go. No,
that's Ben-Hur.
Oh, okay.
Which is a great film.
I was describing the Ten Commandments.
Yeah. Well, is it Ten Commandments? I thought Ben-Hur's where he flies. Oh, they're both like Bible movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But Ben-Hur's one I'm more familiar with. Ben-Hur's a great film. It's like 4 hours long, but it's still a great film. Well, so is Ten Commandments. It's like 4 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
But Beneath the Planet of the Apes, it's a little bit of a bizarre film. Like, you had the mutant humans at the end of the film and all that with the nuclear bomb and stuff. But it's still a good Apes film. So it should be fun to talk about next week on the show and talk about Beneath the Planet of the Apes as the sequels that made us month continues. Unless for some reason there's some sort of curfew put into place, well, it shouldn't be by next week when we record, because right now we are till April 3rd on our shelter in place until they decide to extend it and make it stricter. But that's next week. And then after that, we're going to X-Men 2, The Road Warrior, and Aliens, also in the sequels that made us month. And for our Patreons, it's going to be Highlander 2, The Quickening, which is going to be hard to watch, but we're going to make it through, and then we're going to make fun the fuck out of it.
Hell yeah.
When we talk about it on our Patreon.
We're going to do our best Sean Connery impersonation and everything.
And then we will go to... Make sure you go to rebelradiopodcast.com to check out all our social media links.
Yes.
And everything, like Facebook, for those people that are watching today.
If you're on Patreon, look out for a Arnold minicast.
Yes, we have our first minicast. We'll be out very soon. Next couple days, I might drop it on there. It's already ready to go. I just got to drop it. And then our current Patreon is Godzilla. It's playing right now. For just $2 a month, you can join our Patreon and listen to exclusive episodes and more every month. And we thank all those people that have joined Patreon. We appreciate that very much. And you mean a lot to us.
Yes.
I got to get off my lazy ass.
I like it a lot.
I got to get off my lazy ass and update the website with our names, like I said I was going to do.
Like our real names or our stage names?
No, like the patrons.
Oh, yeah.
They're supposed to get their name on the website.
Oh, that's right.
But I've been lazy and haven't done it.
Yep.
You know, I blame COVID-19 for I'm scared to do it. But thank you guys, man, for logging in and watching us on Facebook Live.
Yeah, thank you.
It was kind of an experiment. We want to see... if people wanted to be entertained on a Friday night.
Yeah.
I was trying to do my Russell Crowe voice. I can't do that.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that not why you're here?
You're the voice guy. I can't do voices. I suck at it. And if I try to do voices, even my son looks at me and tells me, no, don't do that, Dad. Oh, well. But as always, thank you for listening. And we appreciate it. Again, stay safe out there. And we appreciate you listening to the podcast. We will see you all soon. And as always, remember, just go there and do it.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rubber Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?
Hey, this is Marky Ramone, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.